Good morning. Mistakes and forgiveness. Oh, the mistakes I have made. And are always somebody else's fault. That seemed to be so. Yeah. Now, this particular sermon, for those of you who have not made mistakes, nor struggle with issues of forgiveness, whether you need to be forgiven or whether forgiveness is going on with you, just listen and you'll learn something about the rest of us, hopefully. Because we try to avoid owning our mistakes, and issues of forgiveness are very complex and difficult because to address them often means a change in who we are and a change of how we relate to others. I thought I'd read some quotes about mistakes and do some thought about mistakes first. And one of them that really struck me was, always make new mistakes. Don't make the old ones over and over and always make new. The implication is we're going to make mistakes. Something from Theodore Roosevelt. It is not the critic who counts, not the person who points out how the strong person stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the person who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends herself in a worthy cause, who at best knows achievement, and who at worst, if she fails, at least fails while daring greatly so, that her place shall never be with those who are cold and timid souls, who know neither victory or defeat. So the next time we criticize someone. Al Franken. Mistakes are part of being human. Appreciate your mistakes for what they are, precious life lessons that can only be learned the hard way, unless it's a fatal mistake, which at least others can learn from. Al Franken. Mary Pickford. If you have made mistakes, there is always another chance for you. I guess unless we just read Al Franken. There is always another chance for you. You may have a fresh start any moment you choose. For these things we call failure, it is not the falling down, but the staying down. Do you have any mistakes in your history that when you remember them, or remember a particular mistake, it comes up and grabs you, and you feel the sting of it, and you let it go as quickly as it came to you. And you know if you wouldn't have made that mistake, your life would be different. Your life would be better. But that mistake haunts you in your life, grabs you, has a sting to it. If that's so, then maybe that's an indication that self-forgiveness is in order. If there are mistakes I have made, if we live in or wish for a life that would have been, that would have taken a different turn if I would not have made that mistake, a major life directional change, we rob ourselves in this present moment of vitality, of life. We rob ourselves of the full potential of relationships, and we rob ourselves of intimacy in relationships if in our mind we live with if it would have been otherwise. We rob ourselves of the full capacity to commit if we live in the fantasy life based on the remembrance of a mistake we made. An example. Now, this is from my own life. It'll be news to my mom, who's here.
Maybe.
But I think I was in the fourth grade, and so that probably put it around 1963, 64. And I was taking drumming lessons in elementary school. And one day I'm walking down to the drumming class, and I had a box of Boston baked beans. I don't know if you ever know those candies. They were great little candies. And being a drummer, once I'm free from the classroom, I'm free to do anything I want, right? Because drummers are kind of that way. So I pop a couple Boston baked beans, and the drumming instructor said, "That's it for you. Go back to class." And that ended my drumming career. I could have been a great drummer. Ringo Starr. And you know, in 1963, 1964, that's when the bands, the young kids were starting to learn the guitar and the drums, and in 67, 68, 69, 70, 72, all the garage bands. And I mean, I could have been great. I could have been famous. I could have been something other than who I am. What a dangerous statement that is. But then I got to thinking about myself. How many drummers overdosed? How many drummers didn't turn out so well? We don't know what would have happened if I wouldn't have made that mistake. There's a, in theological terms, we're coming onto the ground of being and non-being, becoming who we are. And non-being basically is that which could have been. And that which could have been produces anxiety, because I could have been that, I could have been that. And in midlife, I do a little more reflecting, and we as human beings do a little more reflecting on our lives, and what could have been seems to be a stronger piece in our lives. We could have done things differently. If we get lost in what could have been because of our mistakes in life, if we get lost in that, we do rob the present moment in time of a vitality, of a celebration in life. We rob ourselves of the potential of relationships, of a deep intimacy in relationships. We really rob ourselves. And we don't like, and our minds will not recall the mistakes if they still have a sting to them, if they still have a hurt to them. But today, I'm challenging myself and others. If there are memories that periodically, once a year, every 6 months, once every 3 years, once every 2 years. So you get to be above 50, you can say that. That meaning once every year, once every 2 years. There's a memory that grabs you and haunts you, and you immediately flee from it. That's an indication for some introspection and to look. And today I'm saying that not only is that a reflection of possible need for self-forgiveness of the mistakes we have made in life, but it is also a reflection on how we will deal with forgiveness in general. That's kind of the foundation. How we deal with our own mistakes in our lives is foundational on how we relate to others and forgiveness to others. And moving on to thoughts about forgiveness, I thought again I'd quote some people. And Hillary Clinton, a quote from Hillary Clinton. The Bible says, they asked Jesus, "How many times should you forgive?" And Jesus said, 70 times 70. And she says, "Well, I want you all to know I'm keeping a chart." John F. Kennedy, "Forgive your enemies, but never forget their names." No. Robert Frost, "Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee, and I'll forgive thy great big one on me." Mahatma Gandhi, "The weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is an attribute of the strong." Nathaniel Hawthorne, "It is to the credit of human nature that except where its selfishness is brought into play, it loves more readily than it hates. hatred by a gradual and quiet process will even be transformed to love, unless the change be impeded by continually new irritation of the original feeling of hostility. The original feeling of hostility. The indication is that there could have been an intrusion into one's life, a betrayal of one's life, the original hostility. And if the original hostility is not dealt with, that the rest of life there'll be a process that continually irritates that original hostility and which makes forgiveness not possible. So the question we ask today, as we own our mistakes and deal with our mistakes, the question we ask about forgiveness today is the issue in terms of forgiveness, is the issue about healing the injury or forgiveness of the other? Two different things. Are they the same process? Are they different processes? Is the issue about forgiveness to reestablish your life, or is it about the other? What is the issue when it comes to forgiveness? One must understand the full extent of the injury in which the word forgiveness comes into play. And the full extent of the injury, what happens when we're injured? What happens when we're betrayed? In today's world, what happens to those partners whose partner has betrayed them with infidelity, makes a splash on the television? What happens to their partner, the one who was betrayed? They feel shame. They don't want to go out in public. I mean, what has happened in our own lives when that happens? What happens to us? Sometimes we begin to interpret ourselves in our own sense of, what am I inadequate? Am I not of worth? Is this just another failure and many failures? In counseling over a couple decades, I have heard stories from partners whose other partner has betrayed them and has been living a secret life. And they would say, I've been living a lie. Who am I that I've been living this lie? And I thought I was this person in relationship with this person. This person is not who they said they said they were, and that's what I was basing and sharing my identity off of this person, which we do in relationships, and they're completely somebody else. Who am I? Who am I? So in that forgiveness process, who am I? Is it more important for me to come to terms with who I am, or is it more important for me to focus in on this process of forgiving the other person? I've already been victimized. Yet I'm called on to forgive this other person. And when I was working in a group called Parents United, Parents United is a treatment process for persons injured by childhood sexual abuse, whether it was the victim, whether it was the offender, a parent, whoever might be in that particular family system. And we had a process in that group where you work to confront the offender. And that process of working to confront the offender in that whole program, forgiveness was not a primary issue. In working to confront the offender, the primary issue was, could I confront my offender and not want something from the offender? Not to give the offender any more power in my life, because if I want something from the offender, I'm continually giving the offender power in my life. If I want something from that person that I struggle with whether I should forgive or not, like if I forgive them, I want a response from them to my gracious forgiveness of them. If I want something from them, they still have the power over me. So we work with people in that program that they could make a statement of declaration. I remember what you did. What you did had this effect on my life, and I have overcome that. It's not okay what you did. And if there's anything I can do to help that not happen to others, I will do so. And then they would leave that person not wanting anything from that person, because the primary process of being victimized is to heal yourself, not to be concerned with the other. But yet I've got this feeling in me that I need to forgive the other for their offense, for what they did. I need to forgive this other person. And how many times have I heard people struggling with this issue
I know I should forgive them, but I can't. Therefore, there's something wrong with me that I can't forgive them. Again, the victim is victimized. There's something wrong with me. And in recent history, in our political world, we have seen, and I think a dynamic has been revealed from a particular religious perspective that has been there, but we've certainly seen it out in the open. Somebody commits an offense, and they said, well, it's your obligation as a particular religious type person to forgive me. Because I betrayed you, you need to forgive me. And if you don't forgive me, what's wrong with you that you can't forgive me? Is your relationship with God not good enough that you can forgive me? God forgives me. What's wrong with you that you can't forgive me? And again, the victim is victimized. Okay, another quick example. And I was talking to my father about this. He's politically oriented. And he related to politics. And he said, you know, it's curious. He said in the Gore-Bush election, because Gore did not ask for every county in Florida to have a recount, Gore did something wrong. Not that there was fraud committed against Gore. Gore did something wrong for not asking. Again, the victim is victimized. There are three worldviews, or three perspectives on forgiveness that I would like to share. And some I think are problematic, and some I think are helpful, which is reflective of my worldview. So we'll open that up for conversation. The first is a psychological worldview that goes something like this. Anyone who has ever been victimized, and that includes survivors of crimes, accidents, childhood sexual abuse, political imprisonment, warfare, and so on, must decide whether or not to forgive the perpetrator. There can be no middle ground to this decision. You either decide to forgive the person who hurt you, or you'll hold on to bitterness and anger forever. Again, the focus is on the other, and you have to make a decision in relationship to the other. I'm putting the red flag and saying, that is problematic. Again, is the question, is to the healing of the betrayal, or the relationship to the other? Another view from that worldview. This understanding also leads us to the simple psychological definition of forgiveness. Forgiveness is the refusal to hurt the one who hurt you. And I'm going to suggest that forgiveness, it is possible that forgiveness has nothing to do with the other. Now that worldview says forgiveness does have something to do with the other. In the second view, by a pastoral theologian, John Patton, professor that I had and liked, had a good relationship with, wrote in a book called Is Human Forgiveness Possible? He asked the question, is it even possible? Right? And he says, forgiveness is not something we do. It is something we discover. As a process of living life, and self-development, and self-exploration, and self-reflection, as that is a, for him, he's saying, is that is a normal spiritual process in life, one day we will discover that forgiveness has occurred. And even if we haven't even attended to forgiveness or that particular injury directly, if we are taking care of ourselves spiritually and as we move through time, one day we will just discover that that particular incident has no meaning anymore, has no power over me anymore. He reports that the difficulty is, from his perspective, that there's always an element of shame in being victimized, in being betrayed, and being exposed, and being startled by something of an awareness of somebody betraying you. There's always an element of shame, and the issue with moving through forgiveness is our avoidance of the shame. We will defend ourselves not to feel the shame. And because of that, we cannot discover forgiveness. He says we are unwilling. It's curious. He says, defense against shame is an unwillingness to let go of our rage and our righteous anger and our sense of that in a way, since I have been victimized, I hold power over the offender. He says, all those kind of things will be going on, but they're all about avoiding shame. A third view, principles from another worldview, is from the worldview that we have been talking about, that I've been talking about recently, about the sense of divine that is within us and the soul and the perfect nature that is within us. And within that worldview, you get these kind of thoughts. When you were guided to this pathway, take the opportunity to release any restriction or constriction you feel surrounded around the offense. With regard to yourself or another, take that into the heat of the fire of unity, the quality of forgiveness that burns up all things except the beauty, and the quality of love. What that worldview says, that in your process of working with who you are as a human being, you move beyond dualism. You move because if I have my sense of self as victimized and my sense of offender in my imagination here, that's a dualistic picture that can never be reconciled. Victim, offender, and I will always have that, and I will always hold on to my anger, and I will be bitter about that, and I will be hurt about that, and that will motivate me to do righteous and good things, but it's a dualistic picture of a conflict within my mind. And this worldview says, when you move into that place, when you feel and experience that pure sense of love and compassion, you move past that dualism and you move into the unity of being. And in that unity of being, all the history is burned away, and the only thing that is left is a sense of love and compassion. And then when you step back into life and live there, you will not carry that anger and that rage with you. Three worldviews and how to deal with forgiveness. And very different. One, you must deal with the offender and you must decide whether to forgive or not forgive. The other, take care of yourself, work your spiritual life, work who you are, work your program, however you want to put that, work the 12 steps, work your meditative life. And as you do that, as you reflect and make meaning on who you are, one day you will discover the offenses will no longer have power over you. You will discover that sense of freedom. And the other worldview is, in your practice of your spirituality and your meditation, when you move into that sense of pure love, when you move into that sense of light, the history and everything burns away, and what you will discover is a unity of spirit within yourself, and as you re-engage the world, the need for forgiveness is not there, because in a sense, what needed to be forgiven has burned away and no longer exists. The difficulty with dealing with the issue of forgiveness is that in my mind, if that event still has life, whether I want to own it or not, it no longer, after a period of time, it no longer is about the offender. It is about me. It's my memory that's holding that event. It's my psychic life that's fueling the life and the feelings of that event. It's the formation in my imagination, as Emerson talked about in the reading, it's the formation in my imagination of the offender and of the life of that event that I'm giving my psychic life to keep alive. Then the question becomes, what's going on with me that I'm keeping that alive? What's going on with me that I'm doing that? It's been 10 years, it's been 20 years. And the issue's painful, and it's hurtful, and I don't want to look at it. And I don't want to understand who I am and who I have become in relationship to that event. The defenses against the shame of that event can be addictions, can be the inability to have close, intimate relationships, can be me not being an active person, me not joining groups, me withdrawing from life and living a very quiet life, chronically low-grade, depressed kind of life, where I don't engage life anymore, whereas if that event would not have happened to me, I may have been more engaging in life. What does it mean about me? That my mind is feeding those. The spiritual process of dealing with forgiveness is a difficult process, a hard process. It's not an easy process. What have I lost because of the intrusions into my life? Who have I become? These are the hard questions. And yet, at the same time, if we do the journey and ask the question, deal with the mistakes that I have made in understanding how I relate to myself and the mistakes that I have made, that's a reflection on how I deal with forgiveness in general. When I do that, the work with forgiveness is a pathway to freedom. It is a pathway to revitalize my life. It is a pathway to be able to make commitments. It is a pathway to deepen my intimacy in relationships and draw closer into relationships. That pathway of dealing with my mistakes and forgiveness. It is a way to become your fullest self, your best self. And I say, let's go and live freely.